All right, very good presentation today, Alex. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, on this particular topic, as Alex just talked about the action plan there, this is something that we'll provide you a copy of it so you guys can review if you have any other questions over the next month, and then we'll bring it back at the next commission meeting and just ask you to take an action to adopt this overall action plan and move forward with implementation of it. So this is a information item to present it to you, and then at the next commission meeting, we'll ask for your formal adoption of that action plan moving forward. Alex, anything else to add to that?
Nope, I think you covered it, Tom. Thank you.
Great.
All right, very good. Thank you. We're going to keep moving here. Emmett Kaiser is going to join us for item number 28, Wintering Wildlife Update.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Emmett Kaiser, Regional Wildlife Supervisor out of Sioux Falls. Thanks for the opportunity to visit with you today a little about our efforts to assist our landowners with depredation issues on their livestock feed. It's been not an atypical South Dakota winter, but probably one of our most memorable ones, at least for the staff down in the Southeast region, probably one of the top five that we can recall that really caused some challenges. So the staff have been working their tails off, and as you might expect, it's been an all hands on deck effort. But anyway, next slide, Nick. We'll talk a little bit about the snow depths. As you can see, picture northeast South Dakota extending all the way over to Selby and Gettysburg area, but you see up on the very north end between Sisseton and Britton, the tip of the Prairie Coteau, and the snow in the northeast was pretty extensive in a number of areas, and again, reflective of the number of requests for services that we've had with our livestock producers and working with them again to protect their livestock feed and the stored hay and so forth. Next slide. This is a photo of the snow depth on February 3rd in southeast South Dakota, much the same. See the areas maybe a little more extensive in terms of the snow depth. Again, as I said, this has been a particularly challenging winter for the staff in the southeast, and late January and way to mid-February, the snow cover in the southeast, especially in the Springfield and Yankton areas, increased substantially. So it's been a rather challenging winter for us once again. Western areas, again, scattered issues out there as well, but not nearly the snow depth that we've been dealing with probably in the eastern third and the southern quarter of the state. Next slide, Nick. As you're well aware, wildlife tend to gather in large groups during the wintertime, oftentimes a result of their efforts to have more eyes on predators, and certainly they're out there seeking and trying to make a living off the land. You see deer and turkeys gathered in some of these sites. We've had reports of some extensive herds of deer numbering anywhere from 500 all the way up to 1,000 in some locations. So the deer have gathered in large herds, and it's been a little tougher for them to make a living during this particular winter, especially in those areas, again, with the heavy snowfall. Next slide. As I mentioned, all hands on deck effort, especially over in regions 3 and 4 in the southeast and northeast corner of the state. The south end of region 2 was also pretty heavily engaged in working on depredation issues. Some 480 plus requests for service, and that number continues to go up as time goes by here. We're still not quite out of the woods with regard to the winter time. It's taken a pretty good hold here. We've had about 25 plus turkey complaints around the state and a few elk complaints in region 1 as well. But again, lots of different tools out there, but an all hands on deck sort of an approach. Next slide, Nick. You saw this slide earlier. Andy Lindblom had shared it with you, but the GIS staff are really able to create some great maps that really help depict the focal points of some of these kinds of activities. But you can see the hot spots on this thunderstorm map in the eastern third of the state really point out that the areas where depredation calls for service were greatest. Want to give a shout out to Ben Reichman and for his help in putting this map together, but our GIS team has really done an outstanding job to help our staff really tell a story about depredation, but also many other aspects of fish and wildlife management over the years. Next slide, Nick. In terms of our depredation management tools, so we've got two types of tools. On the top, talk a little bit about the proactive tools that we've got available. We've got the ability to work with landowners to construct permanent big game stack yards. That program has been in effect probably since the mid-1990s and has put a lot of permanent stack yards out on the landscape, especially out in the western portion of South Dakota. I've done a great deal of benefit to the producers out there to protect their feed and hay supplies. We also here probably starting in the mid-2000s began a program where we provide steel panels to landowners. It gives them a little more flexibility to move those stock panels around and protect stacks of ground hay and corn, other kinds of feed that they might feed in a different location in various years. Then, of course, we have our wildlife food plot program that continues, and after a winter like this, we'll no doubt see an increase in the interest of that program in particular. On the reactive side, some of our WDM programs that we've got available, normally, we can start with the low end with hazing and scare devices, but in a winter like this, they're just not very effective at all. So the next tier of program that we go to generally is our loaner steel panel program. We've got the ability to haul those steel panels out, usually normally about 40 to 50 panels per producer. Takes care of them. They can move them around, get their feed protected and keep the deer and turkeys away until they get it fed and they're able to move that to other areas that they might open up to feed from as well. We also have some programs where we've got netting and a product we call secure covers available. I'll show you some photos of those here shortly, but they've been beneficial in some locations as well, depending upon how the feed is stacked and how much of an area that we need to cover. Our last resort generally on these depredation challenges is to establish some short-stop feeding stations. Obviously, with the disease issues looming out there, we're always cautious about our efforts to gather deer and impact or increase their nose-to-nose contact and exchange of bodily fluids. But we have had to use that approach this year, probably more than other years, just because of the depths of snow in some of these areas and the difficulty we've had in actually protecting livestock owners' feed supplies. Next slide, Nick. So the in terms of the landowner contract steel panels, we've delivered and erected over 3,000. Actually, that number now is approaching 4,000 panels that we've delivered. We'll oftentimes bring those out on a trailer, and sometimes the staff will work with landowners to get to the panels erected around the feed source that they're trying to protect. Next slide, Nick. You can see they can be used both to protect hay supplies, and in this case on the right, that photo is of a corn pile, eared corn pile, and so they're really a nice tool to have available. And so a lot of landowners will opt to keep them and enter into a contract to retain those for coming years. And that really helps out, I think, too, especially in years like this where we're really inundated with calls for service. Next slide. The other two products that we sometimes use are these secure covers or the green covers. We can, cover round bales that are stacked up, whether in a stacked pile or just, on a single level. Really good. It's a really tough product. But in addition to that, we've got some netting products that have been made available over the years as well, and those can work kind of in a quick basis as well, and to provide protection to those bales and other kinds of feed. Next slide. In terms of the short-stop feeding stations, obviously it's our responsibility to maintain those short-stop feed sites, although we do work with landowners in a lot of cases. We purchase hay from them where they, feel comfortable providing that opportunity. The idea is that, we sort of want to take any of the landowners' feed, especially during tough winters where there might be short of feed already. But we establish our own stockpile of hay and corn. Left photo is of our Sioux Falls Game Fish and Parks shop where we've stacked some square alfalfa bales around our pile of corn, and we can feed that out on an individual day to help us maintain those feeding sites. But sometimes we've even got the opportunity to utilize plow trucks, is the one you see on the right, and we've got little dump boxes that are bolted into our pickup trucks, and they really work handy for getting that feed out on the ground. Next one. As you can see, shortstop feeding sites get visited pretty quickly, and they gobble the hay up. And so the challenge is to maintain those sites so that, the deer don't return to bothering that producer. So in a lot of cases, we're tending those sites every 3-4 days. Sometimes they'll last a week, depending on how many deer in a particular place. But a lot of times on some of the more remote sites, we even utilize a snowmobile with a small sled on it to get both corn and hay out to those locations. Next. Obviously, in everything we do, whether it's our private lands habitat programs or hunting access, landowner cooperation and assistance is just absolutely vital to our success in delivering these services. We've got a lot of landowners work with us very closely and to give us ideas on how we can be most effective. If you want to go to the next slide, Nick, a lot of times they'll be out there plowing roads for us, getting us access into where we need to get to, and a lot of times they'll help us unload the hay and so forth for these feeding sites as well. So been a great partnership this year. As you might expect in any winter like this, it gets to be pretty darn tough out there for those producers to, not only contend with deer depredation, but just to get to their cows and clearing snow and keeping machinery operating in sub-zero temperatures is an ongoing challenge for them as well. So we certainly have appreciated their assistance, and it's been, like I say, absolutely vital to helping us be successful. Next slide. The last thing we do after every winter like this is we gather our staff up and meet to conduct a post-season evaluation of our efforts to talk about things that work, things that didn't work, what equipment needs we might want to look at, how we can modify our program or our contracts with producers to develop stack yards and utilize our loaner panels. All those kinds of things come into play, and we try to do that as early after the depredation season as we can so that all those things are fresh in the minds of staff, and they're all eager to share ideas and things they've thought of throughout the tough winter. But once again, hats off to all our staff that pitched in. We had conservation officers helping our damaged staff. We had fishery staff, wildlife staff, park staff helped out a great deal with providing some equipment and staff to attend some of these stations. We had an education staff out of the outdoor campus here in Sioux Falls helping attend some of our shortstop feeding sites as well. So it's an all-in effort to meet almost 500 individual producers out there who have had depredation issues with the ongoing winter. And so hopefully we're next couple, 3 weeks, we'll start to see some more snow melt and some areas open up and get some of these animals moved out to feed on their in natural areas that are opened up and become more available to them again. With that, I'll be happy to entertain any questions. I did throw a couple of slides in if you want to talk a little bit about winter's impact on pheasants. The normal winter survival was probably 60-65% over an average winter. In severe winters, even in areas where you've got pretty good habitat, pheasant survival can be down in that 35% range based on some of the research and studies been conducted over the years. On average, South Dakota probably sees, at least in eastern South Dakota, anywhere from 35 to 45 inches total. That certainly was exceeded in a number of these areas that have had persistent snowfall, especially since we saw some of those first heavy snows in December. Research has shown that survival of pheasants is really directly related to the total winter snowfall. In fact, we have lower survival and could expect that during years with greater snowfall. In South Dakota, as I mentioned earlier, the areas where we've had the greatest snow depths have probably been in the eastern third of the state and the southern quarter of the state. So while this was a particularly challenging winter, and staff have mentioned that pheasants are having a tough time making a living out there, the good news is pheasants have a great potential to recover, almost astoundingly so. So we're hopeful that we'll have a warmer spring, and it won't be a cold, wet spring, which would certainly not be beneficial for pheasants coming out of a winter like this. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to entertain any questions. Hope that provided some insight into what's been going on and winter depredation challenges.
Any questions from the commission? Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Bartling. Thank you, Emmett. On the tarps and the netting for like those haystacks and things of that nature, I've always understood about the panels and whatnot. But with those tarps and whatnot, are those agreement related item for producers as well, or do those need to be returned by the spring once the snowfall is gone? How does that program work?
You know, we haven't had a great deal of use for in our region with the secure cover devices, especially. The netting, I know, has been used more extensively out west. But my understanding is if a producer has an ongoing problem, he might retain those covers. In some other cases, if it's been not a frequently recurring issue, they'll oftentimes return that material, and we'll keep it back in stock and utilize it perhaps on somebody else's farm or ranch in the future.
Commissioner Spring.
Emmett, is the hayyard program still in effect where some of these producers could get high fencing, permanent fence to put their hay and ear corn and whatever in? That's still kind of a half paid for by the department, or how is that program still going?
Through the chair. Commissioner Spring, you bet we still have that program. Probably remember some of the discussion we had years and years and years ago on the West River Deer Work Group you participated in, and that was kind of a key program, an effort that came out of those discussions. And I think it's been a wonderful program. It's ongoing. We've increased the labor incentive on that, I think, a time or two, and I think an individual landowner within a given year can be provided up to $10,000 for stackyard protection. So it's been a great program, and I think the good positive benefit of something like that is it's more of a permanent fix, and it'll be a long-term fix for those individual producers. They won't have to worry about, the response time for the department to get out and provide some assistance to them. They get it protected right off the bat, and it's working all the time.
Additional questions?
Secretary?
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Emmett, thanks for the presentation. I just want to personally thank all the staff that have been definitely participating in these efforts of the damage program. I know it's been a trying winter for a lot of staff and a lot of producers, and when the winter continues as it has been continuing, you know, it does wear on staff morale, and it wears on producers' patience and things like that, and I just can't thank staff enough for having those tough conversations with producers across the state and also serving those producers where we need to serve them and try to help them mitigate that wildlife damage. So we've done a fantastic job, and I just can't thank staff enough. Over 450 requests for service, that's a large number across the state, and very proud of the team.
Very good. Any other comments?
Thank you.
Director Kirschman.
Madam Chair, if I may, to Tom Kirschman, Director of Wildlife Division, following up what Secretary Rowling just said, I just want to remind you also that when you look at surrounding states or consider all states in the Northern Great Plains here, no other state wildlife agency has a program in place like we do for wildlife damage, animal damage control. We're very unique in that standpoint from having a very strong program to work with and collaborate with landowners, producers across the state dealing with deer depredation, turkey depredation, coyote damage, right? Coyote control, predator control, all the different things that we do, Canada goose depredation. So our staff do a phenomenal job, but it is something very unique to South Dakota, and part of it is, and primarily is, because our strong commitment working with our landowners across the state, not only during these tough times, but then that also leads to other positive things from population management to access to many other great positive things that come through it. So it's a relationship process that happens 365 days out of the year.
Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I might just say thank you to staff and to Emmett and all of your crew and whatnot. Your calls aren't done, I'm quite certain. Because winter's still here, and the deer are moving, and so you're going to get the calls. And I know staff is stretched thin; they're tired, and you know if you think it's been a long winter for producers, it's long for our staff members too. So I personally appreciate it as a producer, you know, that we make a call and we get a response, and that's really important, you know, to a producer who's struggling. Calving is just getting started. It's going to be yet a tough remainder of winter, and who knows what spring's going to bring us. So I too applaud the department and all the staff for all the hard work they're doing.
Emma, just a question. This is Commissioner Rissler. Early in when the winter first started to hit, I know our friends over with the Second Century Habitat pushed an article out, and I believe the article came from Pheasants Forever, but the reason they did it, they were starting to see an increase with the average public being concerned and wanting to feed the pheasants and the deer. Have we received any calls, concerns, questions about the public wanting to help out?
Thanks for the question, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. And yes, we have taken lots and lots and lots of those calls, and you know, we do try to provide suggestions. You know, they understand well that during times like this, wildlife is basically struggling to make it through the winter, and you know, it's a tough time for wildlife. Mother Nature can be pretty harsh at times, and this is one of those years where it's particularly tough, especially in those areas with heavy snowfall. Obviously, it would take millions and millions upon millions of dollars for us to mount any kind of a feeding program, and it's just not practical. But, you know, we do, again, want to thank our producers. A lot of them are throwing out extra feed and feeding the pheasants and throwing out a little extra corn here and there, and we know members of the public are as well. And it's just a real challenge in a winter like this where they don't have, you know, their normal feeding sites available because almost every plant is covered up, you know, by a foot of snow. And so it's been pretty tough. They do, of course, wildlife are pretty resilient. And they do prepare for winter. They do put on layers and layers of fat. And you know, they work hard to get themselves in great condition prior to the start of a normal winter. But you know, this one has been particularly tough. And so, you know, we'll conduct some assessments at the end of the winter, and we'll be able to see what we got for wildlife left on the landscape. You know, I think in a lot of cases we'll be very surprised, and I think we've also heard some of those statements from a few of our producers and staff around the country that, hey, wildlife is thriving out there yet in some locations. You know, it dwindled in a few locations where it was maybe a little tougher. Certainly appreciate all the concern and the calls. And you know, I think we all appreciate our wildlife so much here in South Dakota. And we hate to see it struggle through a winter like this. And so we do take a lot of those calls. And we give them the best advice we can. And a lot of times it comes down to maybe trying to open up some ground, you know, where you've got a harvested cornfield and maybe you can expose some of the grain that they get out there, just pick around and get at that waste corn and other kinds of crops that might be available. But it's been a tough one, especially in certain key locations. So all in all, again, just appreciate all the help from producers and of course, staff played a heroic effort here this past winter trying to get everybody the assistance they so much needed.
Commissioner Beast.
When we do these short stop feedings, you call them, those are probably primarily on private land before they get to the feed yards. If we have a GPA in that area or something, do we try to draw them to that and feed them there instead of on the private land? We use some of our own land for doing that.
And back through the chair, great question, and yes, we do, and in those instances, you know, we'll certainly reassess an opportunity to perhaps put a winter food plot out on a piece of GPA or work with an individual producer. You know, if this has been an ongoing issue, we're certainly going to get our private lands habitat staff out there and talk with some of these producers about the potential to, you know, work with them on a food plot. But by and large, yeah, we do take those opportunities to place those food plots strategically, you know, where we've had deer coming. And of course, a lot of these deer are coming from, you know, a circle maybe 10, 15, even 20 miles wide to some of these sites. So, any place we can could get them intercepted or provide an alternative food source, we'd certainly want to try and do that, whether it's on public or private land.
All right, very good, Emmett. Thank you. Very well done presentation.